Okay. Well, let's start on page 49. So, we talked last week about magical healing. We talked about the metaphysics, or the mechanics, really, of the two forms of light, or the two points of light, or in points of ingress, or light coming into the body-mind-spirit complex. One is root chakra, one is crown chakra. Root chakra is triangular in the sense that it's like a tripod, the base of the feet, the base of the spine, that's three points, the crown being singular at the top of the head. Where those meet is really the degree of power that the being manifests. So in some sense, will can be cultivated. In another sense, will is the result of cultivation. Will meaning inner power or courage in the Serenity Prayer. Power, to a large extent, is actually the result of seeking, not by cultivation of power. On the positive path, this is a whole other story, we can't go into it, but on the positive path, where those two points of light meet, which includes love for those on the positive path, or goes through heart, represents the degree of access to universal light or universal power that we personally have. And so moving that point of, the point of meeting of the energy down from crown, the energy up from root, the point of meeting is our position, our dimensional position, actually, in consciousness in this life. Now, that dimensional position represents a degree of access to universal light and power. And that's will. And that the light that we're making use of course, can be used by positive or negative adepts, positive or negative entities. And we'll get into that a little further. And let's go to the passages then, starting on 49, the section Positive and Negative Empowerment. Through free will, Don asks, can both positive and negative adepts access cosmic power? Ra. Those who are on the service to others path may call upon the light strength in direct proportion to the strength and purity of their will to serve. Those upon the service to self path may call upon the dark strength in direct proportion to the strength and purity of their will to serve. Now, that's strange. Number one, we're using the term, Ra uses the term light strength and dark strength. Really, I think that's unnecessary and a little confusing, because there isn't light and dark power. There's just power. And that power or light can be used with love or without love, right? With balance, seeking balance or not. With love, seeking balance, in balance is positive path. Without love, without balance, without seeking balance is negative path. But what's at essence here is that the quantity and quality of the light power, or quality and quantity of cosmic power that's used or accessed and used, depends on the strength and purity of the will to serve. Now, the negative serves the self, the positive serves all. All includes self and other. That's love. So, technically, it's called service to self, service to other. But the path of service to other, positive path with love, is really service to all. In fact, that would have been a lot better for Rob to say. I'll talk to them next time I meet them. Or they already registered this and say thank you. Service to all includes, of course, the self, but certainly includes others. Now, it's the strength and purity of the will to serve that is the determinant of the degree of access to strength, light strength. There's no dark strength in essence, so I'll just say light strength. Light meaning power or energy. Not positive necessarily, but pure power, right? Pure power is just dandy. It ain't negative. The Buddha was a guy full of power, I'm sure, and Nityananda too. So, it's not that power, loving power or seeking power for its own sake, of course, is negative. Seeking power for serving the self is negative. But what accesses power, what opens the door wider to the infinite light power, is the strength and purity of the will to serve. Now, on the positive path, it's service to other, service to all. Does that mean we want to walk around thinking, I want to serve everybody, I really want to serve? Not at all. Think of Nityananda, think of the Buddha. I mean, you don't know Nityananda, but these guys are not thinking, I want to be a yogi so I can help all the creatures. Not really. Their desire is liberation, freedom, complete manifestation, actualization of what they are. You know, union with Godhead, or complete and perfect enlightenment. That's certainly not service to self in the negative sense of negative path. But it looks like they're helping themselves. But the helping is a dissolving of separation. The help, you know, union with Godhead or Satchitananda in Hinduism, which Nityananda spoke about. He spoke about Omkar and, you know, Pranava and, you know, union with the absolute in the Hindu terms. The Buddha spoke about complete and perfect enlightenment, freedom from ignorance and suffering. Now, those goals are certainly not negative, but they're also not, I want to help the world and I'm going to do everything everybody needs me to do, and that's what my life's all about. It's not that, but they're not negative. So there's a little bit subtle thinking required here. That's service to all. So the yogic path is service to all. And it's a mistake for us to buy into a 4D positive, imbalanced view of the positive path. Indeed, service to other, service to all is essential. That's the nature of the positive path, actually. And that means an attitude of being good and clear and helpful to everybody all the time, at best. So that's being encouraged, or that's, you know, that's the starting point. That attitude is the way. But it doesn't necessarily mean being with people as a helper. It could mean going to a cave or going to the foot of the tree and meditating for the rest of your life, or studying, or whatever it may be that fully transforms mind and energy. And that's called service to other. And in terms of the power we manifest, it's all about strength and purity of the will to do that. The will to, in this case, seek transformation, which can also mean learning, which includes learning, study, discussion, healing, absolutely. But it's the strength of that desire for that transformation, healing, and learning that accesses light or will. And so let's talk more. You'll get more as we go along here. Magical words and light invocation. So you see, this is advanced stuff. This is a 57-page PDF, and we're on page 49. So we're almost at the end, and these are the most abstruse sections. Don asks, you stated that in a magical working in service to others has that a magical working in service to others has the potential of alerting a great mass of light strength. Alerting a great mass of light strength. How does this work, and what would it be used for? Ra says, there are certain words which act much like you're dialing a telephone. When they are appropriately vibrated with accompanying will and concentration, it is as though many souls upon your metaphysical or inner planes received a telephone call. These spirits can then answer this call by paying attention to your working. So this is fits very well our discussion about guides, guidance, and protection. In the context here of mantram, or sacred words, certain words, vibrations, syllables, there are many, of course. The primary is Om, A-U-M or O-M, which, you know, just like the negatives would be twisted upside down by the Japanese cult, Om Shinrikyu. The negatives are always, you know, they're like monkeys, really. They just take God's creation or the universal creation of love, light, and then they smudge it. And then they say, it's mine, it's mine. I'm important. I'm important. So, Om is the original mantra, and it's said to be the sound that that the creator manifests to initiate creation. Before there was a creation, the vibrating creative sound was Om that manifest a creation. So some of these sacred words or mantras, like dialing a telephone, actually vibrate on higher planes. And this is why for the Brahmins of India, the real Brahmins who are really serious, most of them are, but some guys are really hardcore, they don't want you to know the correct pronunciation of their Sanskrit, because you may alert somebody that they don't want you to alert, or you may get some power. And I've read this somewhere, and I think it's probably true, that simply the right sound or a certain sound or syllable or mantra, which may be just one sound or more, simply that vibrated correctly with will and concentration will do something automatically, mechanically, interdimensionally. Like, you know, a demon will appear, or an angel will appear, or something will appear automatically. It doesn't matter who you are or what you are, but if the will and concentration is there with the correct intonation, something happens. And this is the principle of call, spiritual calling. So Don asks, there are many of these words, both used in church as well as by adepts. What's the difference in effect between sacred words used in churches and specifically magical incantations used by adepts? Ra says, if all those who use these words in your churches were adepts, consciously full of will and seeking, of concentration and conscious knowledge of the calling, there would be no difference. No difference meaning no difference in the effect of their calling or their intonation between they and adepts. The efficacy of the calling is a function of the magical qualities of those who call. That is, their desire to seek the altered state of consciousness desired. Their desire to seek an altered state of consciousness or a higher state, a higher dimensional communication or something related to transformed consciousness and energy What does the trick is consciously full of will and seeking. Will and seeking are really the same. Any seeking is a manifestation or deployment of will. You know, I seek to drink my tea. That means I will to get it, and I desire it. So, what's essential for successful calling, in this case, magical calling, is conscious will and seeking, concentration of mind, which is one-pointedness, and interestingly, conscious knowledge of the calling. Meaning, I know I'm calling, I know I'm here in this dimension, I know there's higher dimensional life with power, I know that manifestation can occur, or communication, or assistance, or whatever. And with that knowing, I call. In this knowing, I call. So this is magic, and it's used by positive and negative. And so, further, Don asks, you spoke previously about certain sacred Hebrew and Sanskrit words being powerful because they were mathematically related to the structure of creation. How is this so? Ra, as we previously stated, the linkage is mathematical and related to musical ratio. Okay. Some on earth have tried to resolve this mathematical ratio, but as these words are presently used, the coloration of the intoned vowel is part of the vibration which cannot be accurately measured. However, it is equivalent to types of rotation of your primary material particles. Oh my God, what are they talking about? We'll take it from back to front. Primary material particles represents the rotation or the quality of the photon of light. A photon of light is, of course, a hypothetical, ball of light, energy ball that is light, or energy light sphere, right? I mean, there's got to be a sphere for something to rotate. But of course, this is actually a metaphysical concept. It's real to the extent that creation is real. It's an illusion to the extent that creation is a concept or a thought. In our veiled condition or in this languaging, we can think of all matter and energy as the manifestation of some kind of rotational primary particle. I mean, now we're getting into, you know, quantum mechanic, quantum physics, metaphysics. Quantum metaphysics. How about that? Quantum metaphysics. That's a good title for a book, by the way. So, primary material particles is a concept that is used to explain energy qualities of matter. So the body, you see on Earth, Ross says that the primary particle or the photon of light is transforming into fourth dimensional. That's actually what harvest and planetary transformation is about. I mean, not a harvest of souls necessarily, but planetary initiation or dimensional shift is the upgrading of the rotational quality of primary material particles. Primary material particles is like the atom, you can say, right? If you want to think of energy as a wave and a particle, it's a wave and it's a particle. It's a field, energy field, wave, and particle. These are basically concepts, but they have some use. The particle of light, the wave energy field of light, can be understood to have a rotational quality. Those qualities are related to chakras. That chakras, of course, are related to dimensional levels or dimensional energy quality too. So, the intoned vowel, I think everybody's probably, your steam coming out of your ears. I hope not. In, you know, when an adept adept yogi, let's say, does a mantra and knows what he's doing, there's careful coloration of the intoned vowel. It's mathematical, but it can't be measured in our understanding because some of the energy, vibrational quality of how the vowel, how the part, that part of the magical word is spoken, some quality of how it's spoken relating to the vowel is not able to be measured, because we don't, it's too subtle, I would guess. It's sort of a sub vibrational quality of the sound, whatever that is. But yeah, the sound that's used for magical calling in this way, represents a mathematical ratio, musical ratio. Very interesting. I don't know music and I don't know math that well, so I couldn't help you on it. But it's some kind of mathematical, musical ratio of sound, vibration, that vibrates higher dimensional light. That's the point. That's also why mantra can be used for spiritual growth in the simple way of doing mantras and chanting. It affects the chakras. And the chakras represent higher dimensional consciousness of us. And that represents a different rotation, higher type or quality of rotation of primary material particles. I think I understand this sort of. Don asks further, if these sounds were to be precisely vibrated, then what effect or use with respect to the purposes of the adept would they have? Ra, you may consider the concept of sympathetic resonance. When certain sounds are correctly vibrated, the creation sings. When certain sounds are correctly vibrated, the creation sings. So I always, or for years, have said, if you want to find friends, speak your truth. Speaking your truth is like sing your song. So sing your song, and those who like the song will sing along. Sing your song, and those who like your song will sing along, because of sympathetic resonance. So sympathetic resonance is, you know, vibrating in resonance, sympathetically. Sympathetically also relating to sympathy and heart chakra, which is an interesting aside, which is that the word sympathy, yeah, I mean, maybe Erhard would know this, or somebody, but not me. Sympathy, you know, is from sympathy, related to symphony, right? Symphony, somebody knows this, I'm sure. So sympathy, pathos is like emotion, I think. Pathos. There's a whole genre of theater called pathos. So sympathy is with pathy, with emotion, or with the same emotion. And that's a very important principle of service to others and healing and helping. Meaning, really helping others definitely requires fourth chakra activation. Fourth chakra activation, or love and kindness and compassion, down on the ground means sympathy. Means sympathetic resonance, means we vibrate their vibration. We vibrate with them. We allow ourselves to vibrate in sympathy, in resonance with the vibrations of mind, body, spirit of the other. We feel, I feel your pain, said a famous liar. and feeling with, sympathing, is basically the way of offering our own greater understanding or a condition of greater unification of our being for them to sympathy with too. So Ra said that the healer doesn't heal. The healer doesn't heal. Of course, the self heals the self. But the healer offers a a field of harmonized light which the other self can sympathy, can resonate in sympathy with, of course, if they choose, and that represents their healing of themselves, their sympathy, their sympathetic resonance to the light field we manifest, which hopefully manifests a greater unity of love, wisdom, and our total being. Development of love, wisdom, a greater unity, a greater manifestation of the law of one, which means being at one with ourself and self with all, somewhat, however much. So this whole concept of sympathetic resonance, in fact, I wrote something about this a long time ago for my master's or PhD coursework, something about sympathetic resonance or the principle of resonance and service. A very beautiful idea. And so when certain sounds are correctly vibrated, the creation sings, meaning higher dimensional forms of light, other higher, faster rotation, dimensions of higher rotation of primary material particles, meaning atoms or light photons of higher dimensions where more evolved beings reside, very much waiting for the call, very happy to serve, you know. They're very happy to transmit in harmonic resonance, you know, harmonic resonance, right? It's like harmonic convergence, you can say, without the politics. They're very happy to resonate in harmony with pure calling. And so that's the principle of mantra, that's the principle of magical word, that's the principle of calling for guidance and protection, that's the principle of calling higher self to help us understand our life. Why am I stuck? How am I stuck? How did I create this? How can I get out? How can I get out of the stuck? So, sympathetic resonance is the name of the game, actually, in the interrelationship between dimensions. Don asks, would these sounds be of a musical nature with an arrangement of many different sounds, or would there just be a single note? That's a nice question. Don, Ra answers, your question is not easy to answer. In some cases, only the intoned vowel has effect. In other cases, most notably Sanskrit combinations, the selection of harmonic intervals is also of a resonant nature. Aha! The resonance of a harmonic interval. That's a nice phrase. The resonance of a harmonic interval. And that's, if you've ever listened to Sanskrit chanting, Vedic chanting, these guys, they really know what they're doing, you know, and they train for years. And so it's not only the sound, but it's the space between the sounds. The creation of the quality of the silence or the empty space between intoned vowels. I'm not skilled in such things, so I can't explain more than that. But it's very interesting. It's similar to a single, it can be a single note, a vowel. It's, you know, I mean, the Sanskrit understanding, Hindu Vedic understanding of the chakras is that each chakra is associated with a syllable. All of them. So that's very much the name of the game. And like on the name on my little Skype self-description thing here, it says Om Ah Hum. This is a mantra, which of course I don't intone correctly, but it has a resonance. And so that's what mantra is really all about. It's not about the meaning. So when these American Buddhists put their chanting into English, it's long gone. Now you can understand the meaning, and if you want to chant and think about your chanting while you're chanting, that's fine. But that's not what mantra and chanting is about. There's mantra or chanting for the purpose of single-mindedness or development of concentration, and then there's mantra or magical invocation, which is different. Yeah, mantra, sacred words of power. So it's the function of sympathetic resonance that creates or manifests the power associated with mantra. Mantra is not itself powerful. It's the vibrating vibrating of light that mantra creates that is the power. And of course, that power can be used by positive and negative. So Don asks, I'm gonna cough, I have a little thing. So Don asks, then would the adept use this resonant quality to become more at one with the creation and therefore attain his objective in that way? That's Don's personality about attaining objectives. But you see, the question is really about the positive adept, white magic, magical invocation on the positive path, using it for self-development or self-perfection. And that's nice, a nice thought. It's not just about active service to others, but it's about personal transformation. And Ra says, it would perhaps be more accurate to state that in this circumstance, the creation becomes more and more contained within the practitioner. But the balance of your query question is correct. And, Ra is precise. So it's not about me becoming at one with that. It's that being more and more what I am. And I had this experience in meditation once where it wasn't that I was one with, I didn't feel that I'm one with that, but I felt that that was what I am. That basically meaning that, meaning the universe, the creation. It was a sense that the seen is the seer. The universe is the self. So it wasn't that like I am one with the all, but the all is what I am. Or the all is what this is. This meaning me. Nityananda didn't say me, just like Ra doesn't say me. Nityananda said this one, and some other Hindu gurus use that term, this one, for the me, too. And this is deeper than it appears, because to say this one in place of the word me, referring to ourself, on two counts is important. One is that each of the words has a deep meaning. This one means this particular manifestation of the one. This example of the one. This manifestation of the all one that you can call a me or a you or a me. That's what he used to refer to himself. This is the same as the seen is the seer. This is again, an epiphany or enlightenment experience or higher self condition of being. It's what we are. You know, enlightenment, a satori or enlightenment experience, being an experience of oneness, if you have to divide it into a me and a you, or a me and a it, the seer and the seen, is felt, experienced more as the all is what I am, rather than I am that all. And so Nityananda said, this one, meaning the me or I as a particular manifestation or appearance of the one. And that's what those guys are. They're basically standing light field, a standing field of energy that appears as body, mind, spirit, that is absolutely transparent to the creation. So the whole creation manifests through it, potentially, or as it is, in that one. It's an example of the one in body. So Ra says the creation becomes more and more contained within the practitioner. So this is, you know, in fact, in Japanese Buddhism, there's something called Zen sickness. Zen sickness is all sorts of different problems in mind that come from mind and body, coming from meditation with attachment. Various subtle attachments that are developed by in meditation. And one of them, of course, is grandiosity. I am enlightened. I am the Buddha. And of course, in the Zen tradition, the teacher might hit you for that or say, you know, get out of this temple, you're a disgrace. Even after the guy had an enlightenment experience. Because that's not right view. And it's a distortion, and it's an idea that I'm all that big stuff. I'm so big. If it's seen that way, it's not real enlightenment. It's an attachment with the sense of self. So anyway, this is what the adept does. The adept may or may not, of course, use magical incantation or invocation may or may not use it. It's not always done. There are Buddhist teachers who are quite enlightened and don't do much with mantra, I imagine. Nevertheless, the higher level of the spiritual path, really unity, six-dimensional, is an experience of the creation or the all being more and more manifest in me, or what I am is more and more understood to be the all. That's sixth density. And I think that's pretty clear that that's what Ra is at this point, and that's their nature and their manifestation. Okay. So, next week, we'll start on page 50, and we'll go further with Jesus, the workings of Jesus. Very nice. Half a page on that, and the magical personality, and the path of the true adept. So perhaps we'll do a page and a half next week. Today we did just one page. Workings of Jesus, magical personality, and the path of the true adept. All important and lovely information. So thank you, everybody, and see you again soon. Thank you.